of a short speech by famous Iranian Shiite orator and lecturer Hujjatul Islam Ali. Stay tuned.
شما نگاه کنید خدا عالم رو برای چی خلق کرد؟ برای شیطنت؟
An important epistemological question is why Allah created the world? Did he create the world so that mankind can do evil deeds, corruption, bloodshed or violence? The answer is no. Allah created this world for the servitude of mankind. And the person who is ready to serve Allah in its fullest scale is the vicegerent of Allah on earth, Imam al-Mahdi, the Promised One. Imam al-Mahdi is the vicegerent of Allah on earth, and this rightful vicegerent has all the main divine attributes on this planet and serves Allah in the best way possible.
پس بنابراین مثل یه باقی هست که یه گل استثنایی یا یه درخت میوه استثنایی توشه که باغبون.
If we want to resemble it, we can say that this planet of Allah is like a garden, and Allah as the gardener has a special tree in his garden. He pours his divine water on his garden for his special tree of the garden. Of course, this does not mean that Allah has no attention towards his other creatures. No, even the useless grass of the garden will benefit from the divine water of Allah. But the main cause is the presence of his truthful vicegerent on earth, who is Imam al-Mahdi ajalallah. This servant of Allah, who is Imam al-Mahdi, is very strong in his beliefs, and polytheism has no place in his soul. This is why the Shia Muslims believe that Imam al-Mahdi is alive and, in fact, has been alive during all these years. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care. Fi amanallah.
Terrorism or pandemic? Arbaeen is unstoppable. In the name of God, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Salam everybody and heartfelt condolences to you all on a very poignant anniversary. Today in Iran is the 20th of Safar or Arba'in, the anniversary of the traditional 40th day of the immortal martyr of Karbala, Imam Hussein, peace upon him, when our grief becomes fresh for the world's most heartrending tragedy. Stay with us for a feature on the magnetic personality of the younger grandson and third infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad. Blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Fortunate are those who are with Hussein, and unfortunate are those who leave him. Know that Hussein is one of the gates of paradise, and his enemies will be deprived by God of even the fragrance of paradise. What you heard was a hadith which is indeed an excellent description of the merits and virtues in the sight of God of the younger of the two leaders of the youth of paradise, the grandsons of the Almighty's last and greatest messenger to all mankind with the universal message of Islam, Imam Hassan and Imam Hussein, peace upon them. If the elder was deprived of the caliphate or temporal political rule of the Muslim world, and then martyred in Medina through poisoning by the hypocrite Muawiyah in 58, the younger was cruelly martyred in Karbala on the battlefield, along with his brothers, sons, nephews, cousin, and loyal companions in 61 AH, by the hordes of Yazid, the equally evil son of Muawiyah. So great was the sacrifice of Imam Hussein, peace upon him, that the saga of his martyrdom has continued to resonate with increasing devotion every year, inspiring seekers of truth and inviting the firm faith to his shrine from all over the world, especially on the occasion of Arba'in or Safar 20th, or the anniversary of the tradition 40th day of immortal epic of Ashura or 10th of Muharram. They come in millions to Karbala, the rendezvous of martyrs, undeterred by the terrorists that threaten to trigger bomb blasts and the coronavirus pandemic the evil minds of the contemporary world have genetically engineered to plunge the world in biological warfare and to disrupt such huge gatherings. The pilgrims tread the footsteps of the Prophet's loyal companion, Jabir ibn Abdullah Ansari, who, in spite of his old age, poor eyesight, and the tyranny of Yazid's rule, had left Medina for Iraq on hearing of what had befallen the leader of the Youth of Paradise, and reached Karbala on the 40th day of the tragedy of Ashura along with his companion Atiyeh bin Sa'ad al-Kufi. Imagine the spectacle that had greeted the Jabir on the first ever Arba'in, 1,382 lunar years ago, as he stumbled at every step while making his way to the grave of Imam Hussein, peace upon him, after having bathed in the river Euphrates. For Jabir, it was the height of grief as he threw himself over the tomb, crying incessantly, with the words Habib man la ya'rif al-Habib, which means, how could a friend not recognize a friend? In his salutation to the person whom he had often seen as a child in the lap of the Prophet, he outlined the lofty humanitarian ideals for whose preservation Imam Hussein had sacrificed his life. Today, in the footsteps of Jabir, devotees from all over the world converge on Karbala on the day of Arba'in to pay respects at the shrine of the chief of martyrs with chants of لبیک یا حسین. It means here we are, O Hussein, to your call that went unanswered on the day of Ashura, when surrounded by the bloodthirsty Umayyad army, you raised the cry, هل من ناصر ينصرني? Is there any helper to help me? This year, less than 100,000 Iranian pilgrims have been given the permission to visit Karbala by the interim Iraqi government, citing the pandemic as the reason, although millions from all over Iraq have been allowed to march from all directions, even from far-off places, walking for 20 or more days to reach the shrine of Imam Hussein, peace upon him. Hopefully, next year, the number of Iranian pilgrims will increase substantially, as well as for pilgrims from Pakistan, India, Lebanon, and other places longing for Arba'in at the gate to paradise. Still, most of the faithful, especially those coming from southern Iraq, make it a point to cover the 80-kilometer distance between Najaf and Karbala on foot after paying respects at the shrine of the commander of faithful, Imam Ali, peace upon him. Both sides of the road, there are myriads of tents to render service and provide rest, refreshment, and meals to the devotees, as if the local people are taking part in a contest for gaining more and more divine rewards by helping and serving the pilgrims. There are columns at regular intervals on the Najaf-Karbala road, numbering 1,452. The old and the young, the children and the toddlers, and even infants in the arms of their mothers or strollers move like a huge sea towards Karbala. There is no difference between the poor and the rich, as all are devotees and without any feeling of superiority or inferiority or class distinction. They rub shoulders with each other, sit at the same table to eat and sleep in the same camps. The so-called mainstream media of the West rarely covers this annual spiritual march, which is the world's largest gathering. It means global arrogance and their local agents are afraid of this grand display of faith, and moreover, many media outlets are paid by Washington, London, Tel Aviv, Riyadh, and Abu Dhabi to ignore the Arba'in march. They, however, cannot prevent it, since Imam Hussein, peace upon him, is indeed the beacon of light and the ark of salvation. As the Prophet had foretold about his younger grandson, devotion to whom links the heart of the faithful to each other. This is evident by the banners on the roadside that proclaim in bold letters the Arabic phrase, Hubbul Hussein Yajma'una, or Love for Hussein has gathered us together. Today there is no trace of the graves of the Umayyads, let alone their palaces, and God willing, tomorrow there will be no sign of the Americans, the Zionists, the Salafis, and all other terrorists. While Imam Hussein, peace upon him, rules the hearts of the faithful all over the world, till the reappearance of his descendant, the promised Imam Mahdi al-Qa'im, peace upon him, who will establish the global government of peace, prosperity, and justice by ridding planet Earth of all vestiges of oppression and corruption. Amen. The cruelest rulers of history was the Abbasid tyrant Mutawakkil, who has earned eternal damnation and notoriety for his enmity towards the progeny of the Prophet. In the year 237 AH, he ordered the tomb of Imam Hussein, peace upon him, and the adjacent houses to be destroyed and blocked people's coming to the place. He razed Imam Hussein's tomb to the ground, but soon it was rebuilt by the faithful. In 247 AH, he was informed that a large caravan of the people of Kufa and other regions were coming toward Karbala. He dispatched a huge army under the command of one of his commanders to threaten the people. Then he destroyed the Imam's grave and turned the waters of the river in a bid to submerge it. But miraculously, the water stopped a respectable distance from the tomb. This surprised the onlookers, and for this reason, the area around the mausoleum came to be known as Al-Har, or the place that evokes astonishment. Mutawakkil was sent to the bowels of hell by his own son, and soon the tomb of Imam Hussein, peace upon him, and the mausoleum around it was rebuilt on a larger scale until it took the shape of a grand structure. Today, after the fall of the tyrant Saddam and his repressive Ba'ath minority regime, the mausoleum of Imam Hussein, peace upon him, has been enlarged to accommodate the growing number of pilgrims. It is an astounding fact that after around 14 centuries, Imam Hussein, peace upon him, guides the seekers of truth and freedom more than ever. What is the mystery behind this much love and affection for Imam Hussein? It is obvious his great sacrifice that saved Islam and all humanitarian values. Only God Almighty knows the rewards for the pilgrims. Imam Hussein, peace upon him, is indeed the flag bearer of the campaign of righteousness against falsehood. He refused to yield to injustice or to acknowledge the misrule of the tyrant Yazid. Despite being vastly outnumbered by a huge Umayyad army, after presenting his arguments, he bravely fought the attackers and attained martyrdom along with his valiant brother, Abul Fazl Abbas, his heroic son, Ali Akbar, his teenage nephew, Qasim, his infant son, Ali Asghar, and other members of his household and the loyal companions. And we end our Arba'een program with passages from the special ziyarat, or standard form of salutation, for the immortal martyr of Karbala. He met with deadly dangers, acted justly and fairly, made use of everything belonging to him to pay full attention, to give sincere advice, took pains, made every effort, and put his heart, mind, soul, and life at the disposal of thy mission, O God, to liberate the people from the yoke of ignorance and evil of bewilderment. Peace upon Hussein, the oppressed, the martyr. Peace upon the one surrounded by a tightening circle of sorrow and grief, killed by a horde of savages.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I
have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. You are listening to the program Islamic Upbringing, wherein we discuss problems, issues, and other questions parents have regarding the Islamic upbringing of their children. As usual, all of the answers provided in this program are based upon the Holy Quran and upon the narrations of the Prophet and of the household of the Prophet, peace be upon them all. Joining us in the studio is our guest speaker, Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi, who is an Islamic researcher at the Seminary of Qum. Dear Sayyid, welcome. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us. Dear listeners, today's topic is a continuation of the previous program's topic about the 26 rules to follow when we want to discipline our children. We have already discussed four rules, and today we'll pick up starting with the fifth rule. Dear Sayyid, please enlighten us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم. So we said if a parent finds himself at a stage or a state where he needs to punish or discipline a child, then there are principles that he needs to have or formulas he needs to go through in order for him to punish a child. So we mentioned four, we got up to number five. Parents have to keep in mind that when it comes to disciplining a child, that they should not discipline them except when they are relaxed and comfortable. So, for example, if a parent is angry and he wants to discipline a child, you'll see most of the times they will choose the wrong means of punishment, or they give the wrong instructions of punishment that they will regret later on when they are calm
more
and collected.
Calm, yeah.
So, for example, you say to the child does something wrong. It's like, okay, you are not touching your PlayStation for, like, let's say, like for a whole day, right?
Right.
And then the parent, after that, he's like, you know what? When he's calm and collected and everything, life goes to normal, and that poor child is just not doing anything, right? He's just sitting there.
Right. Do you realize it's an overreaction?
Yeah. Or he just like starts to annoy his parents, like, why don't you just go play?
Right.
Which goes against what his punishment to begin with.
Right.
So the parent made the wrong choice or the wrong punishment in the moment of anger. So the parents need to be calm. They need to be collected. They need to relax. Let it go. And then, you know, think of something suitable to do to the child. Then do it.
Some might say that the child has done something bad, for example, in public, or a horrible misbehavior, and the parents, for example, of course, they're going to have a reaction, a negative reaction to it. So should you just like wait to calm down for a few minutes and then call the child?
Well, that's a problem. That's precisely the issue, that when the child does something wrong and you find yourself being angry, then obviously the result of your punishment is going to be wrong too.
So perhaps we could, like, if the child did something wrong and we are angry, we could maybe say to the child, sit down for a minute while we ourselves calm down.
Yeah.
And
so
then we can speak about discipline.
Exactly. Not just that, but, I mean, even when you are angry, okay, so sometimes, we're not saying that we shouldn't get angry, because that's human beings will get angry.
Right.
So my child did something wrong, I didn't get angry, but I tell myself, okay, let me educate my child, let me talk to him, let me put some sense into him in a nicer manner. Right. So I shouldn't make haste judgment like I've heard this from parents, like they do something outside publicly, like you said. Like, when you get home, I will show you.
Right. Yes.
One, you threaten them.
It's a threat.
When you get home, I will not let you play PlayStation. So you're giving punishment on the spot.
or actually says, you know what, darling, this is wrong. We shouldn't be doing this. We'll talk about this later, right?
Right.
And you just leave it. Calm, and then that's how you calm yourself.
Calm
so you
down
tell
first.
Him that there's something wrong, but you will leave it for later to deal with it.
And on that note, let's go ahead and take a quick break.
When I was born, the first words that I had heard were the words of Allah being whispered through my ear. And as I felt Allah's presence in my soul, that day Islam took me in its fold.
Welcome back to your listeners. You are listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. Today we are speaking about the 26 rules to follow when disciplining our children. Dear Sayyid, please continue the discussion.
So that was our rule number 5, that you need to be calm, collected, don't threaten, don't make punishment that you will regret.
Right.
Okay. Now we move on to number 6. There has to be what we call levels in trying to discipline a child. So there are stages of discipline. So, for example, instead of resorting to hitting, which is, let's say, it is the last result,
right.
Begin with just showing expression on your face that you're not happy. Now, just give them that angry face, for example.
Right.
It says that the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa ala, the companions, they would know that he is angry with something just by looking at his face. When his face changes red, for example, they know that the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa sallam is very angry.
That was enough for him.
That's enough for them. He doesn't need to talk. He doesn't need to do anything. And then there's like, oh, we seek refuge in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala from your anger.
Right.
Just by his face. So as parents, to begin with the process, we can just have an expression on our face to indicate to the child that what they're doing is wrong.
Right. And that might also be enough sometimes for the child.
Most of the time you find that's enough.
Right.
And the child's like, you know what, I'm not going to do it again because that's going to make them angry. Right. So they will leave it. So you don't just jump from 0 to 100 in a matter of a slap.
Of course not.
Right. So you don't do that. So you begin with, I don't know, with a few things, and the child will repeat it. You repeat that look as well, and so on and so forth, until you move on to talking, and then after talking, discussing, and so on and so forth.
Right.
So it has to begin. You need to have steps when it comes to punishing.
That
you
gradually escalates.
It has to be a gradual step by step, in order to discipline your child.
Right.
Not straight away. Even, for example, if you want to give them time out, you don't say, for example, for straight away, you say, I'm taking a PlayStation from you for an hour or 2 hours. No, begin with 5 minutes, 10 minutes. Something short. Something tangible, something that child could feel. And sometimes he can actually move with it.
And they can predict what the result would be so if they were
to
disobey.
10 minutes, he would feel the heavy weight of the 10 minutes. And he's like, you know what, I shouldn't do this. Because God knows how it would feel for an hour.
Right.
If you say to him an hour from straight away, he will just be upset, he'll be furious, he'll be angry, and he'll be like, you know, he'll revolt back.
Right.
Because it's too much for him to handle. So I give him a small dosage of, you know, of punishment, if we can say that, or discipline, so he can begin slow and slow.
Right.
All right. So this is when it comes to number 6. When it comes to number 7, the punishment has to fit the mistake. Right. It has to be in equal proportion. So for example, first and foremost, you have to ask yourself, does the punishment itself need, or does the mistake of the child needs the punishment or not?
Right.
Is it going to affect them or not? Is it repetitive or not?
Right.
So you need to ask yourself so many questions to get to the point. It's like, okay, you know what? I'm going to punish them now. So, and when you come to a conclusion that the parent or the child needs to be punished, for example, needs to be disciplined, that discipline has to be equivalent to what they did. For example, a child spills a kind of drink.
Right.
And the mother screams her head off at him.
Right.
That's not equivalent to the mistake. It's a simple mistake. Oh, please be more careful next time. That's all required.
Right.
To yell and scream at him, that's way out of proportion.
So the punishment must be equal to the mistake.
Has to fit. Exactly.
Right, right. And on that note, we will take a quick break.
Imam As-Sajjad alayhi salam said, "A child's right is to be kind to him when educating him, forgiving him, covering his mistakes, acting moderately towards him, and helping him."
Welcome back to your listeners. You're listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. Today we're discussing the 26 rules to follow when disciplining our children. Dear Sayyid, please continue the discussion.
So when we looked at number 7, we said it has to fit the criteria, which requires a lot of work, actually, especially from the parent. It requires them to think so hard before taking action, which in fact that process of thinking itself, it should help the parents sometimes even cancel the whole thing. Like, it's not like we said before.
Forces them to think rationally and logically.
Yeah, it's not required. Like,
right.
Especially with mothers, sometimes when things go wrong in the house or the kids make a mess, the first response is yell at them, scream at them, or call them names. Or, you know, try to insult them as much as they can. And a lot of, mashallah, a lot of parents are very creative in this regard.
Right, right.
So we're saying, well, that's not really appropriate. That's not equivalent to the mistake itself. So you need to think before that.
It also forces the parents to be consistent, because they now need to think, okay, so my child has thrown his food on the floor. What did I do last time, for example?
Mm.
And kind of have an equal measure of the punishment to give them.
Exactly. Exactly. So there has to be consistency in the quantity and quality of the punishment.
Equality, that's a good word to say.
Yeah. So it has to be very consistent. And number 8, when we try to discipline the child or punishment, it has to be done for the sake of, as we say, ta'dib, not ta'dib, right?
Right.
To educate, not to punish. So sometimes we do it and becomes, I think this was the first one, but here we said it should not be too harsh. It should not take a very harsh form, or it causes the child an extreme amount of embarrassment. Okay, because sometimes it could be a small action. For example, you could be outside and your child does something wrong and you scream at him or you pull his ear off or you push him in front of people.
Right.
So we said it has to be done for education, not for punishment, but it has to be not too hard, too harsh, that could actually break him from the inside, especially for a child. If he gets extremely violated in front of other people, it leaves a stigma in his soul and in his personality.
Right, it will remain with him forever. It's a trauma.
Yeah, it becomes like an extreme trauma in the outside when he deals with people. He will feel fear.
For example,
he will feel shame. He doesn't want to go out and see. He becomes like, as we say, an introvert, not an extrovert anymore.
Right.
Because he starts to have this hate of people, because he got embarrassed in front of people. People got to see him being punished. People got to see him being extremely
violent. Shame in that would follow him through the rest of his life.
It will. So we say to the parents that if you want to punish, if you want to discipline the child, it has to be done for the sake of education, but it should not go to extremes that it puts a child in such a mental state that he feels, I don't know, he feels that he's not worthy anymore.
And on that note, Dear Sayyid, we will unfortunately end today's program. I thank you, Dear Sayyid, for your time, and I thank you, dear listeners, for tuning in. As usual, if our listeners have any questions or some feedback, they can contact us at our email, englishradio@irib.ir, or they can find us on the various social media accounts we have under the call sign of Call of Islam Radio on, for example, Facebook or Instagram. Dear listeners, thank you for tuning in.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space returned upon rest.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Dear brothers and sisters, you are listening to The Spring of Truth from IRIB English Radio. I invite you to listen to a short part of the book Sirr Salat, The Secret of Prayer, written by Imam Khomeini. Some of the knowledgeable men comment that Bismillah refers to appeared, namely existence appeared by Bismillah. This confirms with the knowledgeable men of conduct and mysticism uttering that the entire beings, the particles of existence and the visible and invisible realm of manifestations of the whole encompassing name of God is God's effusive and actual manifestations being.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitan rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And you are listening to Spring of Truth coming to you from IRIB English Radio. So stay tuned with us. I am your host, Abdullah Al-Musawi, an Islamic researcher at the Seminary of Qom. We are looking at Imam Khomeini's point of view when it comes to Ashura. Imam Al-Khomeini was quoted saying, 30 to 35 million people during the month of Muharram, especially the Ashura days, all have united aspect and move in one direction. Again, Imam Al-Khomeini, similar to other quotes that he used, he emphasizes on the fact that the movement of Ashura and the movement of Imam Al-Hussein and these gatherings, they have a unity aspect to it. And why is that? Why is unity so important? Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, even in the Quran, he talks about the Muslims being united. When Muslims are united, and when the followers of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam, they are united, then it's simple, they are a lot stronger. The enemies will think twice before wanting to harm them or trying to attack them. The more divided we are, the easier for them to attack and to get to their goals and find us more vulnerable.
When your horse returns to our camp riderless, and your son and I emerge out sorrowful, why did you leave us to fend for ourselves? Hussein, Hussein, the slain martyr.
In fact, the enemies of Islam today, they manage to penetrate through the Muslim world and divide them based on sectarian levels. So you're Shia, you're Sunni, you're this and you're that. They became a lot weaker.
they became smaller bites to eat. And they tried to do the same thing with the Shia themselves. They tried to break them from the inside based on their ideology and which marja you follow or which scholar you are following and what belief do you have. They tried to do that as well. Having said that, we might have certain divisions within the same school of thought of Ahl Bayt Salamullah Alayhim. But yet, one thing always brings us together, regardless of our differences, regardless of our ideology. One thing always unites us, and that is the majalis of Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam. And that is the days of Ashura. That is the day of Arba'een. You see millions of people, regardless of their faith, regardless of their sect, regardless of their belief and ideology, they walk side by side. They hold the same banners. They carry the same flags. And they repeat the same slogans that Imam Hussein gave. So they put aside their differences and they come together. We keep doing this year after year. And I guarantee you, we will be invincible. Thank you for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi.
French Zoo has had a very productive year, welcoming multiple new animals into its collection. Two pumas, two jaguars, nine Peruvian squirrel monkeys, and even rarer macaque twins are new additions to Lemingne Zoo this summer. The animals were bred as part of a program designed to maintain and promote the conservation of endangered species. Once they reach the breeding age, these animals will be transported to other zoos to help boost the population of their species.
Now, a museum in Russia's Kaliningrad has unveiled a special exhibition to the public. It would not be exactly wrong to call the artworks out of trash. All the works exhibited are made of rubbish. The exhibition is showcasing a wide array of objects, including sculptures, musical instruments, robots, and costumes. The project was designed with the aim of raising awareness about recycling. People visiting the exhibition were delighted by the creative use of garbage. Only 7% of waste is recycled in Russia each year, while a vast amount of trash is stored in landfills.
An Egyptian artist is making incredibly tiny statues of famous historical figures and landmarks on pencil tips. 30-year-old Ibrahim Balala is based in the city of Rashid, south of Cairo. He has mastered the art of crafting miniature sculptures. Ibrahim mostly creates statues of Egyptian pharaohs, but Islamic, Greek, and Roman figures also feature in his portfolio. The artist received some criticism when he first ventured on his art, but he persevered and rose to prominence with his minuscule statues. Ibrahim's dream is to open a museum of miniature sculptures someday.
Fourteen lucky penguins have been returned to the seas off the Atlantic coast of Argentina after rehabilitating them from malnutrition and hypothermia. The Magellanic penguins waddled back happily into the chilly waters once they were released. They were distressed, malnourished, and dehydrated when they were found by conservationists in February. There are an estimated 2 to 3 million Magellanic penguins in the world. The cute birds are named after Portuguese explorer Ferdinand Magellan. They are mostly found around Argentina and Chile.
Another groundbreaking archaeological discovery in Peru is now catching attention. 800-year-old human remains south of the capital, Lima, highlight the ancient burial rituals in the South American country. The remains of 8 adults and children buried in a common tomb were found by a group of workers laying gas pipes at the site. They were buried with food, dishes, and musical instruments, including flutes. Archaeologists say that the 8 people lived in the ancient town of Chilca, some 60 kilometers from Lima. They say some of the bodies were buried with the shells on their heads and had bags with cocoa leaves inside them. They say the discovery will shed more light on the pre-Hispanic history of the region. Another 30 human remains have been discovered in Chilca in 2018.
A taxi company in Thailand has turned its vehicles into mini vegetable gardens to help its drivers who are out of work due to the coronavirus pandemic.
The point of this project is so that employees have something to do to reduce stress. To a certain extent, it has helped with reducing our stress, but it isn't really the answer to the situation right now. Even though the drivers and the staff are able to harvest the vegetables for food, it's just part of solving the problem. I think the government should also step in to help us too.
The taxi company is growing vegetables on the roofs and hoods of 300 disused taxis that are parked idly. Prolonged COVID-19 lockdowns have affected the drivers' income negatively so that they are unable to pay the lease of their vehicles. Therefore, working in these gardens has reduced their stress and provided the drivers and their families with food. Amongst the thousands of shops in Tehran's Grand Bazaar lies a tiny tea house with a long history that attracts visitors with its famous treats. Haj Ali Darvish Tea House is the smallest and oldest tea house in the Iranian capital. The 2-meter-wide cafe belongs to 63-year-old Kazim Maputian, who took over the century-old business from his father. He serves a wide range of teas, but his signature is the tea of kindness, a mixture of mint, lemon, and saffron. His tea house is the most famous in Tehran, serving some 200 customers every day. It used to be a tourist attraction before the coronavirus pandemic. Haj Ali Darvish Tea House was enlisted as Iran's intangible cultural heritage in 2016. Farmers working on the border between Venezuela and Colombia have discovered a tusk that is believed to belong to an American mastodon from 16,000 years ago.
We went to the place and the fossil was there, and then we realized it was something very important. We rescued it because there was a risk of it being lost, and at this moment, it's in the Archaeological and Paleontological Museum of Agualinda.
The experts say the discovery would help them with complementing information about extinct animals and ancient settlements. They say the finding of the tusk in the site would increase its potential contribution to scientific researchers. The discovery of mega faunal fossils in South America has been common over the past decades. In 2019, more than 800 mammoth bones were discovered near Mexico. A group of Cambodian students has designed a manned drone in an attempt to beat traffic. The drone has 8 propellers and a school chair for the pilot's seat. It can carry a human weighing up to 60 kilograms. The creative students say the drone is still in its early stages of development and testing. Equipped with four batteries, the human carrier drone can fly up to 4 meters and around 10 minutes above the ground.
Here we have big problems related to traffic jams, so we did some research about this before building the drone. We came up with this drone project as we had the idea that we wanted to solve some problems for our society by making a drone taxi, as well as investing drones for firefighters to help put out fires.
The prototype can or has cost around $20,000 to build. The designers say they need 2 more years to complete the project. The school has expressed hope that the drone could be used in everyday life.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Iran's capital, Tehran, has hosted an art show themed with Aspiration for Peace. Organized by the Economic Cooperation Organization, the event seeks to shed light on the beauty of a global peace through the language of art. Yusuf Jalali reports.
Each one of these delicate works of art are created by an artist from a different country, each trying a unique way to highlight the need for lasting peace in the world. Dubbed Aspiration for Peace, the art gallery is organized by Eco Cultural Institute with the aim of promoting global peace through the language of art.
By holding this event, we want to send a message of peace to all countries. We invited diplomats from all embassies here to gather and unite and celebrate a peaceful gathering. Also, the artworks showcased here are created by artists from various countries, and this represents how beautiful it is for nations to live peacefully.
Art helps connect different civilizations and nations. It helps us bridge the cultural gaps and find commonalities. This will establish mutual understanding and harmony among nations, and therefore conflicts can be avoided.
In some of the artworks, images immediately communicate with the audience, even if faces are veiled. These pictures try to narrate the story of Afghan women and an uncertain future that they're facing amid the Taliban's takeover of power in Afghanistan.
The events that are taking place in my country, Afghanistan, are so painful. It might take hours to tell you how hard it is for an Afghan girl to live in insecurity and uncertainty. But through the language of art, you can understand all these words without the need for translation.
The art show was held on the occasion of the International Day of Peace. Observed every year on September 21st, the occasion was introduced by the UN General Assembly as a chance to strengthen the ideals of peace through observing 24 hours of nonviolence and ceasefire.
A picture is worth a thousand words, and indeed, no words can be as strong as the strokes of an artist in speaking the beauty of peace. And this is how the universal language of art transcends the political and cultural boundaries and touches the hearts of viewers, no matter what language they speak. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
French slackliner has wowed watching crowds in Paris by crossing from the Eiffel Tower to the other side of the River Seine. Nathan Poulenc walked across a rope suspended 17 meters above the ground. He finished the 600-meter course in half an hour. On one point, he sat and lay on the rope before arriving at his destination, the Chaillot Theatre. The 27-year-old daredevil practiced 4 years to perform this show. Poulenc said that he was staying focused during the walk, and that was very challenging.
When I was young, I had fear of heights, and I learned to contain it. During the performance, I really didn't feel it. I really didn't have that problem. I felt some stress over starting it, but no vertigo, no.
Poulenc said that it was an uneasy experience, but he was happy to share it with the public. The athlete started slacklining 10 years ago. In 2019, he performed a 510-meter-long walk between two skyscrapers in Paris.
SpaceX's first all-private crew have successfully concluded the first orbital mission in history with no professional astronauts on board. The four tourists on board the SpaceX Dragon capsule landed in the Atlantic Ocean off the coast of Florida after spending 3 days in space. The capsule was then transported by helicopter to the Kennedy Space Center, where on Wednesday they took off aboard. During the flight, the crew members' vital signs were monitored to study the effects of the environment of space on complete novices. The Inspiration4 mission was an effort aimed at encouraging the democratization of space. It sought to prove that the cosmos are accessible to crew that have not been handpicked nor been in training for years. Visitors and keepers of a zoo in the Peruvian capital, Lima, are thrilled over the birth of 8 baby penguins from the vulnerable Humboldt species. Zookeepers say the chicks were hatched in July and they're expecting 6 more additions later in October. Currently, the newborns spend their days resting in their nests and being fed by their parents. The Huachipa Zoo currently has 42 Humboldt penguins and is working on recovering the species population.
We have 8 2-month-old chicks and 6 eggs. In 42 days, those eggs will hatch and the chicks will come out. The important thing about Humboldt penguins is that we are recovering their population because they are in a vulnerable state. We are increasing their populations with the breeding we are doing in the zoo.
Researchers say a maximum of less than 10,000 Humboldt penguins are left in the wild, with their population size undergoing extreme fluctuations. The species face emerging threats from agricultural activities to their own vulnerability to predators. The Humboldt penguins are only found along the Pacific coast of Chile and Peru and are enlisted as threatened species by the International Union for Conservation of Nature.
A passionate Indian teacher has turned a road into a classroom and houses walls into blackboards to make up for the prolonged school shutdown caused by COVID-19. Deep Narayan Nayak is working with nearly 60 students in a small tribal village in the eastern state of West Bengal. He started to teach students, most of whom are first-generation learners, last year, when all local schools closed under lockdown restrictions. Nayak says that he was worried about his students' education since many of them did not have access to smartphones or internet connection. But thanks to his initiative, his students can learn everything from popular nursery rhymes to the importance of masks.
We are teaching children everything, how to maintain social distancing, how to wear a mask, what is the importance of masks and hand washing. The children came forward and participated in this initiative, and they are also educating others.
The parents and villagers are grateful to Nayak, saying that they are happy their children are no longer wasting their time loitering around in the village. Nayak is now popularly known as the teacher of the street among the villagers.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny. Dear brothers and sisters all around the world, Assalamu alaikum and welcome to Q&A in Islamic Beliefs from IRIB English Radio. In this series of shows, we are trying to touch and talk about some, let's say, questions or misunderstandings which are being asked by different questioners about the theological